Hey mama, it is officially 2024 and it is the perfect time to start getting your finances in order so that you can confidently walk through the new year. That is why I thought today would be the perfect day to walk you through my journey of becoming a one-income family. There are so many great lessons and aha moments that have not only changed the way that I do budgeting, but have transformed my finances into what they are today. This transformation has given me and my family the tools and the ability to make sound financial decisions like changing jobs, buying vehicles, taking unexpected trips, and so much more. So go grab a nice warm drink and listen into my story so that you too can change your financial story. Hey friend, welcome to the One Income Family Podcast. Do you live primarily on your husband's income and find it hard to save or get out of debt? Are you constantly searching for ways to cut costs, live frugally, and do things on a budget? Do you have big dreams only to be stopped by overspending and loosely following your budget? Hey, I'm Molly, and I too have struggled with living and growing a family on one income. But through trial and error and a lot of help from God, my family and I have learned how to live abundantly on less. This podcast will bring you a Christ-centered, simple, and frugal lifestyle, along with how to budget so you can follow it, and time management tips that will transform your budget and your home. So go restart that laundry, grab your Bible, and let's get budgeting. So you think budgeting is time-consuming, difficult, oh, and boring. You're a stay-at-home mom who doesn't have the time to sit down and recreate the budget every single month. It's not something that you enjoy, and you find you have to drag yourself over to the computer to complete your monthly budget, tracking, and bill paying. Trust me, mama, when I tell you your budgeting system does not have to look like this. After working with me, you will find that you can complete your budgeting routine, after the initial setup, of course, in less time than you ever thought. With the hands-off budgeting that I teach you, you will go from recreating the monthly budget to a budget that needs minimal intervention. It has boundaries set in place to help keep you on budget, and it saves you time and brain space so that you can get back to focusing on your family. So start your financial transformation today by grabbing a financial strategy session that you can find at calendly.com/Molly Bunnell. Go shed the stress of trying to figure out this money thing all on your own. Together, we can transform your financial future from something that you dread into something that's simple, takes less time, and allows you to stick to your budget without breaking a sweat. So essentially, it's something that you do without having to even think about it. Stress is gone. It's amazing, right? So again, you can grab your financial strategy session at calendly.com/Molly Bunnell. That's calendly.com/Molly Bunnell. Alrighty, so now is the time that I get to share with you how I became a stay-at-home mom and how we turned from two incomes to one income and the journey that I have went down to make this one income the best that it can be and still not stress about income, because when we started out, we did not have a lot of money, which you will hear about that later on when I'm to that part of the story, but I don't want to jump ahead to that. So I am going to start at the beginning, which this whole one income thing, it started way back when I got pregnant with my daughter. And I knew, oddly, I always said that I was going to be the person who had to keep a job because I couldn't stay home with the kids. Like, I thought I'd pull my hair out and go crazy, which obviously is not the case. I do go crazy every now and again, as every stay-at-home mom does, but it's not to the extent that I had always imagined it was going to be, right? So what happened, is at the beginning of the story, I got pregnant. And I knew that I wanted to be home with my daughter. I knew that I wanted to take care of her myself. I had this strong desire to be home, like almost to the point, which is very unhealthy, but almost to the point that it made me depressed. And it was not a good place that I was in at the time. And I knew that we couldn't become one income because my husband, who is the spender in the situation, before we got married, he went through, I can't remember the exact amount, but it was somewhere upwards close of 7 pickups in 2 years. And that's drastic. And so obviously the fact that he kept trading in and upping the amount, the loan amount kept getting bigger and bigger, more than what the actual pickup was worth. And so what we ended up having to do once we got married was getting rid of that pickup because we couldn't make the payment. It was like a $600 or $700 payment. And, you know, newlyweds don't have that much income, right? Or at least not where we were at anyways. And so we sold that pickup and got a RAV4. Yeah, that's what it was. And because of downgrading, we still had to put that extra like buildup of money, which was around $9,000, I think, extra on top of what the actual car was worth. And we almost weren't able to get the loan, but luckily we could, and it lowered the price so that we could actually make the payments. However, this car we couldn't just get rid of. And so that was the main thing, the main struggle that was keeping us from becoming one income. We had this, it was $600 or $700, however much it was at the time, to a $400 payment, which was more what we could afford, but still living off of one income where my husband at the time was new in this position that he was in. So he was at the lowest ranks, right? And he was maybe bringing in, I think it was about $40,000 at that time. And so for me to stop working and have this car payment, because we also had my student loans. I think we still had a few of his student loans that we were getting paid off but hadn't completely gotten paid off, or else we had just paid his off before we had our daughter. I don't remember. There was a situation there with getting things paid off. I wanted to get paid off before I had my daughter because, you know, then came the hospital bill payment that we were going to have. So we worked on that in order to have our daughter and be able to financially pay for the hospital bills. And so it was a struggle. Like, we could not get rid of this car, and I knew that's what the struggle was. And even if we went and traded it in, we still had that extra like $9,000. I'm pretty sure that's what it was. It was 5 or 9, somewhere in there, extra on top of this payment that we had to make. And even if we traded in the vehicle, we couldn't pay off that loan. And so it's something that we just had to figure out how to get rid of it. Well, after I had my daughter, here I am working at the bank. I was a teller at the time. And I don't know what was up with this car, but this car was an accident-prone magnet. I'm not joking. Every time, I got hit twice in this car, and every time it happened, I was sitting still. The first time I was at a stop sign and someone drove straight into me. I'm like, dude, what the heck? The second time I was stopped getting ready to turn into the parking lot and somebody rear-ended me. Now, I don't know if that was a blessing or a curse. The accident wasn't exactly the greatest thing to go through. However, it allowed us, and I think this was a God thing, it allowed us to be able to pay off the car because it totaled it. And I am the type of person, I don't do that whole gap insurance thing, but because there was so much extra on top of this car, maybe that's why I was accident prone. Maybe because I got gap insurance, it just wanted to get totaled, right? I don't know. But anyways, because we got into this accident, or I got into this accident. Thankfully, my daughter was at daycare, so I didn't have to worry about her being in the accident. But it allowed us the capabilities of getting rid of that loan. And once we got rid of that loan, I was able to become a stay-at-home mom. Like, we could afford getting groceries. We could afford everything that we needed, driving, because my husband didn't really have to drive very far. We lived about a mile away from his job, so he could literally ride his bike. And I think he did a few times. Not when school was in, because the crazy kids, that's who hit me the first time. But the crazy kids driving to and from school, he's like, yeah, no, I'm not going to get hit. But there was a few times that he would ride his bike. And so we didn't have a whole lot of other expenses that we couldn't afford. And so once we got rid of that car, it was like, ah, I can become a stay-at-home mom. I was so excited. And that's what happened. We were able to budget strategically and handle all the expenses. And that was, I think, when I finally was able to leave my job. My husband had gotten a raise, not a raise as in, oh, hey, you're doing awesome, let's raise your job. He was able to get a new position in the same job. So he went from like a lower position to a higher position. So essentially it's a new job, but it's in the same company. You get what I'm trying to say. And so he got a raise because of that. So we went from $40,000 to $50,000. And that really helped us be able to be a one-income family and not have to stress over everything. So we were at that $50,000 a year thing area when I became a stay-at-home mom. And then not soon after, he was able to apply for another position that got him even higher in the company. And so we went from 50 to 60,000. So we really were doing good at this point. And that's when we decided to move, because at the time we had bought a house. And then we sold it and bought my father's property because he had gotten married and was moving. So he sold us his house. So essentially the house that I grew up in. And that's currently the house that we are in now. But we were able to make all these payments work and to move and to up our home. I about said renter's payment. We're not renting it. We own it. So our mortgage. But we were smart about it. We didn't go out and buy a house that's like $100,000. The property my dad sold us, he sold it to us for $80,000, which it was worth a little bit more, but he wanted to keep it in the family. So that's what he sold it to us for. And so he made it so that we were able to afford it and it stayed in the family because he wanted to get rid of it. However, he did not want to go through all of the 30 or 40 years, however long he lived here, of junk that he had accumulated on a 10-acre property. Like, oh man, was it fun going through all that? I think we're at like 2.5 years living here, and we almost finally have it all cleaned up. But there's lots of other things that we've had to do to get this property fixed up. Like the fences are not well. The house needed to be repainted. The heater went out on us the first year that we bought it. So it was like a 30-year heat pump system, AC heat pump, water. I don't know the logistics of it. Anyways, we had to buy a new one of those, which was a good about $10,000. So we had to find ways of doing all this, right? And so it's just really been a good learning curve, because back at the beginning, when I became a stay-at-home mom, even before that, I started the whole meal planning thing, figuring out ways of cutting costs. And because of that, when I became a stay-at-home mom, cutting costs wasn't difficult, like figuring out how and where we could cut costs and live comfortably without feeling stressed. It was something that I had already gotten into the habit of. I created a very elaborate budget at the beginning of my husband and I getting married, and I had fallen off the wagon once we got to this point. And like budgeting, I kept track of my bills. I made sure we had enough to pay for everything. I went through, and that's what my number one rule, that's an episode, which I'll put that episode in the links. In the show notes is what I meant to say. I will link that episode in the show notes. Anyways, this is where I learned my number one rule, is that I needed to go in and pay the most expensive, not expensive, the most important things first, like get all my bills paid, go out then after that and get the groceries right away. So then afterwards, later on throughout the week, we can spend as we please if that was a system, or we could save it, or we could throw it towards the debt that we had, because at that time I had student loans, I had the hospital bill for my daughter, we had the mortgage, I think we had a car loan at that time too. I don't know, we've went through so many different car loans because they just tend to break down on us here lately. Apparently that blue one that got totaled was the best one we had, right? Go figure. Anyways, that's when I learned that rule. The number one rule that I have is to make sure you pay everything that's important first. You get it first and you go down the line, which you should set your budget up that way too, so that by the time you get done, what's left over is either you're spending money, if that's the way you want your budget to be, or it's money that you put into your savings for your goals, whatever your financial goals are, like to pay down debt or to go on vacation or to save up for a vehicle, you know, whatever that might be. But that's where I learned, you know, I started to meal plan and figure out costs. But then I also, about a year later, I think it was a year later, figured out how to, you know, not have this whole feast and famine thing. Because at the time, my husband was being paid biweekly. And so I had created like a biweekly budget and we were paying everything by paycheck. And I realized with our, it was okay when we were back at our old house, but when we bought the new house that my, from my dad, I realized that the amount that we went up, that we were having to pay towards, was really, really difficult to be able to come out of just one paycheck. And we were living in that feast and famine lifestyle. And, you know, where one paycheck, you don't have very much money, maybe $50 after you pay bills. And then the next paycheck, you have like $300, $400, $500 left over that you're like, oh, hey, I can do all this fun stuff. And last paycheck cycle, I was like, oh my gosh, am I going to be able to get groceries? That was not a fun cycle to live in. And if that's where you're at right now, I totally get it. But that's when I figured out how to create like a monthly, bi-weekly system, which is, and I've done an episode on this, but it's essentially where you take your bills, you put them all in a monthly system, or even everything. You put everything in a monthly system, and then you just divide it by two so that each paycheck that you get, the same amount is coming out for bills, the same amount is coming out for your other expenses like groceries and gas and the normal living expenses. And it just makes it so much easier. You know where every dollar is coming from. You're not in a feast and or famine cycle. You can live comfortably knowing that your bills are going to be paid, which if you want that bill cycle, there is also an episode on that. I feel like everything I'm talking about today, I have done an episode on, and you should really check those out. But moving on with the story, what I have learned, you know, this was maybe, it was that same year after I'd figured out the whole way of my solution to the feast or famine cycle, right? I also was introduced to a new type of budget that my husband and I were like, yeah, you know what, let's try it out. And it was a percentage-based budget. And essentially, you open up all these different accounts and you put a certain percentage of your income into each one of these accounts. So it's pretty much like a savings bucket that you use every single time because you have a card attached to most all of the checking accounts. But one thing that we learned was that it was really hard to track, for one, especially when she was showing me this system that I thought was awesome, because when we were struggling with the last cycle, when we were just focused on paying the bills and then paying the groceries and going down that system, and then whatever was left we just spent on us. We didn't really save any money for things that were coming up that came throughout the year that we knew we needed to save for. We hadn't figured that out quite yet. And so when she was telling us how she could save all this money for things that I hadn't even thought about, but things like tags, things like for your car, registration tags, other expenses, like maybe you do propane and it's not throughout the entire year. Like right now we have a system where the backup heater is propane, so the propane only kicks in when the electric heater can't keep up. So we only need that once throughout the year, so we need to save up for that. We like to get beef from a local source, and so we have to save up for that in order to do that. Well, back then, I didn't even think about things like that, and I just kind of let our income tax return be that system for us. Like, oh yeah, that'll be what we pay our tags with and all this stuff. It wasn't a very good system, but it worked for us at the time, right? And so anyways, when she was telling us how to do this, what she had in the example amount to populate through the percentage-based budget that she gave us, she was putting in like $5,000 for the month. And I'm going, okay, yeah, I wish I was getting $5,000 a month, but that's not a thing. I'm getting $2,000 a month, and that's if I'm lucky. And so when I put that in there and I got everything straightened out, it worked for us to be able to save things, especially in the accounts that we didn't really use. Like the percentage amount that went into the bills account, it kind of grew and grew and grew, and then we were like, well, what are we going to use all that extra income for, right? But then in our transportation account, we also had things in there like the registration, like the renewal of the tags for the cars and for breakdowns or normal maintenance, like getting oil and stuff like that. But we found that instead, we were just using it all for gas. We weren't able to keep that separate, and yeah, we didn't really have a way of writing it down, but I just couldn't figure out how to keep that straight and not over buy and stuff like that. So I was like, yeah, this isn't going to work, because it was the same case in like our family expenses and other stuff like that. Instead of it being saved in the important places, it just was being used on whatever we wanted to use it on at the time. Partly that was a little bit of a failure on my part, meaning that I probably didn't budget enough money towards gas, but it still, I just could not figure out a way to track it, and it just didn't work for me. So what I did was I took what I'd learned, I took this system, and I tweaked it to where it fits me. I tweaked it to create a budget that allows me to have a monthly system in a biweekly format. It allows me to not stress over how much money is coming in. It allows me to set up reoccurring transactions into other accounts, so then I don't have to stress over going and moving that money into the accounts, because that used to be a tedious job. With the percentage-based budget, I would have to go and move the money into each account every single time we got paid so that we could use the money. Well, now I have a system where it just automatically goes there, and then I just have to go and check out and see what's left over and allocate certain amounts to our financial goals. That's so much less work than what I was having to do before. It's so much less hands-on and more hands-off, and allows me to have more time. It allows me to save easier. It keeps me from being inside the budget 100% of the time and recreating the wheel every time. Oh my gosh, it is so nice. But yeah, this journey has been a lesson in itself. I have been able to pay off student loans, pay off hospital bills. We've bought and sold, you know, houses like what I told you about. And we've done so many house renovations. Like, we redid the floors and the plumbings in the house we were in before. This house, we put up new insulation on the inside because this is, I think it was built in like the 1800s, this house was. So it's over 100 years old. And so the insulation inside has just fallen all the way to the bottom. So to keep the house warm, we did wasn't the greatest of jobs because I'm the one that mudded the walls and it didn't look pretty, but we put up some pink insulation and some drywall over it just to do a quick little, you know, it was what we could afford at the time without tearing the walls completely down. But then we put in new flooring in this house too, because the old hardwood floors had so many holes in them that we couldn't restore them. There's just been so much that we've done to this house and to the house before that, you know, you'd think that somebody who's living off of $50,000 or $60,000 a year wouldn't be able to do. But if you budget right, if you do the right things, if you are smart with your money, you can do anything. It's possible. You just got to know what you're doing. And so that's what I'm hoping that you are getting from this episode. I'm hoping that you are getting hopeful, that you're starting to think about the things that you want to do. What are your financial goals? What do you want your future to look like? Do you want to be able to stick to your budget? Do you want to have a budget that gives you freedom and doesn't feel like you're being choked and you're having to pinch pennies and be frugal all the time? Yes, being frugal makes the system work even better, but you don't have to be so frugal that you're cheap instead of buying things that are actually quality and going to last. So that is why I'm sharing this story. That is what I'm hoping you are getting from this, and that you are able to take it and run with it, that you are getting motivated to grab the bull by the horns and say, I am taking control. I am going to change my financial future. I am going to make it work for us. And each person is different. So don't look at me and say, oh, well, she was able to do this in like, I don't know, 3 years is how long it's taken me to do all this stuff. But that is so much money that you're able to handle. If you are only getting $50,000 or $60,000 a year, you are able to live a comfortable, happy life, because money is not the thing that makes you comfortable and happy. It does make you feel stable and less stressed sometimes, but if you manage it right, you can get out of that feast or famine cycle like what I lived in before. And don't think that just because before I lived off of $50,000 and $60,000, my husband has went last year he went through three different jobs in 1 year. Before that, he stayed at one job for 5 years. You know, so that's been fun. But we've went from that $60,000 to, I don't even know what that first job yearly amount would have been. But all the way this final job that he's been at, that he's going to stay at, because I'm not jumping ship again for a while. That's a headache trying to rework your budget that many times in 1 year. But we now are getting about $100,000 a year. And when we first got it, I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know what to do with all this money. I've got so much extra coming out of my ears. I'm like, what do I do? But, you know, sometimes that's a good problem. Sometimes it's not a good problem. Yeah, I'll be able to, we are looking into buying a car so that we have one that will last us with less miles on it than what we usually get, because the last one we got was a pickup with already 60,000 or 70,000 miles on it, which isn't the greatest. I like to get under 100,000, but with our budget that we had, it wasn't possible, right? But now we have a little bit more wiggle room in our budget that will allow us to get a little bit lower miles. Still not brand new. I do not suggest ever buying brand new, because you have to think about being able to pay for not only the vehicle itself, but the tags are going to be more expensive with a newer vehicle. The insurance is going to be higher with a newer vehicle. So you have to not only budget for the vehicle itself, but the insurance and the registration tags as well. So think about that when you go looking for a vehicle. That's a tangent for another day, but just a heads up, right? It's on my brain right now because that's what we're doing. But having the extra income is sometimes good, sometimes not. But again, I just want to show you that you can make it with low income. You can make it with high income. You just have to be sure that you are not living above your means. You have to make sure that you're not living at your means either. When you are living a zero-based budget in a sense that every single dollar goes to an expense and there is no fun money afterwards, there is no money that you can put towards savings or towards financial goals or paying off those debts, you know, that is when you start getting stressed out. That is when you feel like you are being choked and you can't do anything fun and you get depressed and it's not fun. I watched my husband go through this when we first became a one-income family. And so I may be the person who is the saver. It was just ingrained into me because my father, he had to take care of my mom who got sick when I was like 10 years old, and she ended up passing away in 2015. But through that 10-year span, she was so sick that we couldn't afford her medication. And so we had to get help. Well, in order to get help for that medication, my father had to not bring in over a certain amount. So he really taught me how to save money instead of use it, because in these times when I think, and I don't know the exact amount, but I'm going to say he was probably only bringing in about $30,000 a year. And when I got used to that and not really having a whole lot of money to be able to go and do things, I brought that with me into my stay-at-home life, like living on one income. I brought that into me even when we in with me, even when we were a two-income family. But it's different when you are living on one income and you're having to really pay attention to what it is that you're doing. So anyways, what I'm trying to say before I make it a long tangent is that I am the saver. It has been ingrained in me to save for my entire life. And so that is what I do. My husband has actually helped me come out of that shell a little bit and not be so stingy that we're cheap and that we're not frugal and not buying the things that are actually going to last and be worth our money. But anyways, as I was watching him go through this journey of being able to buy whatever he wanted when he was living on his own, bringing in, like, he may have been bringing in about $5,000 a month at the job he had before he went to the job that we got together or got married with. And so he could afford that high pickup payment. He could afford, because he was also, at his time, he was still living with his mom or his dad, and they were, like, he would help out around the house kind of thing, but he essentially was living rent-free. I don't even think he had to pay for food. He might have later on, but when you're in that kind of situation and you're getting $5,000 a month, yeah, you can do whatever you want with your money, right? Like, you have all this expandable income that, you know, and then you get married and all of a sudden it's like you got cut off. And that's not an easy thing to go through. And then when he went from that to then having to pay all of his bills because we bought our own house, and then eventually going down to where we only had one income, which meant he couldn't do whatever he wanted with his money. That was a whole mindset shift. My goodness, that didn't want to come out. And so I know what you're going through if you're the spender. I've watched my husband go through it. I've watched him finally get comfortable with it. I've watched him struggle with me being on one income, going through jealousy, going through not being happy, switching jobs partially because he thinks we need more income. There was so many things going through there, so many emotions, so many feelings that I've watched him go through. So I know what you're going through. We have lived it. We are still living some of these things. Even though you may get more income, that does not mean that you are out of the trenches of, you know, not being safe, not being comfortable in whatever it is that you are doing. Like, there still can be stresses, especially if you let that lifestyle creep up on you and you end up living at the point where, yeah, you have more money, but now you have so many expenses that, again, you are living at that $0 amount and you have nothing to spend extra on the fun things or save up on those for those things. And so that is what I want to teach you. That is what I want to help you with, is to still be able to do the fun things that you want, to live on the income, whether it's $50,000, whether it's $100,000, maybe you're clear up to $200,000, $300,000, $500,000 a year, but you have so many costs and expenses and bills that it's pretty much like you're living paycheck to paycheck and you have absolutely nothing to live on. And so that is what I want to help you get through. That is what I want to help you understand, how to manage your money so that you can be the one in control of your finances and not feel like you are stuck living paycheck to paycheck and waiting for that next check to come in so that hopefully you can make the next payment. That is what I want to get you out of and get you into a cycle where you know everything's going to be paid. You know that you are going to be able to make your grocery bill or get the gas that you need. And that is what I want for you. So please, I want to invite you to head on over and grab a financial strategy session so that you can start living this life. You can start creating habits and setting goals and setting routines and systems in place so that you don't have to be so deep into your budget that you are struggling and overwhelmed just from the budget itself. I don't want you to be struggling to stick to your budget because you don't want to do it. I don't want you to be struggling to stick to your budget because it's not fun and it's not joyful. If you have a budget set in place that's not giving you life, that's not what your family wants or needs, then it's not right for you and you need to change it up. And that's what I want to help you do. So please, if you are at this point, go grab a financial strategy session. You can find that at calendly.com/Molly Bunnell, and let's get you budgeting your finances with ease, with simple systems that aren't overwhelming. So please go to calendly.com/Molly Bunnell. So that's calendly.com/Molly with a Y, B as in boy, Enell. And let's get you sticking to your budget with ease and not stress. And I hope you enjoyed today's episode, and I pray that it inspired you into action. If so, would you take 30 seconds and share it with that friend who also lives on one income and wants to learn how to live abundantly on less? Also, please leave a quick review for the show. It lights me up to know this podcast is helping you, and it helps get the show out there to other mamas in need. All right, well, it's time to go play with the babies, so I will meet you back here on Tuesday for another episode. Peace and chicken grease, mama.